You're an aging pilot. You know what it'll take to keep your medical. Now what'll it take to stay insurable? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. We get together on Mondays to talk with Bob about safety issues. Bob, welcome in.
Good morning, Paul.
In the April edition of Over the Airwaves, you talked about aging pilots and insurability. And I think that this has occurred to many of us, Bob. I'm not quite at the age where I'm, you know, concerned about dementia or any of those issues, but you know, I do know that my blood pressure is higher than it used to be when I was a kid, and I know too that in some areas I'll be looking at insurability issues within the next few years simply because of my number on the age graph. And you had some interesting things to say about how to make sure that as an aging pilot you remain insurable. And face it, in terms of the percentage of your total cost of flying that insurance represents, as you get older it can become very significant.
Well, for me personally, I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm in my 63rd year, and I'm hopefully looking forward to another few years of productive flying. But as we all age, we begin to see, as you pointed out, that our critical numbers begin to move in perhaps the wrong direction. I checked with my insurance carrier that insures our flight school, Mr. Owen Cole of Sergeant Tyler and West, and we had a long conversation about what is it that insurance companies are looking for from aging pilots that may be different from when we were a bit younger. And the first thing we had to decide on is what defines an aging pilot. And the magic number, according to Owen, is age 70. When we turn 70, insurance companies tend to look at us a bit different. When we turn 80, it is a very, very suspicious look. And so what can we do as pilots that are coming into our maturing years to mitigate or to eliminate, if we can, those major risks and in terms of our medical? And the major risk that seems to be getting most of us is the issue of blood pressure. Another issue has to do with type 2 diabetes and otherwise known as hyperglycemia, or too much sugar that appears in the urine. What can we do to mitigate the risks of those conditions? For me, and I think it makes sense for all of us, I think the number one thing that we have to pay attention to is our weight. And this is a side effect of living in the abundant American society. And we're all gaining a couple of pounds, unfortunately, every year. So weight control is perhaps the best thing that the doctors are telling us that we can do to mitigate some of these lifestyle conditions or diseases that get us.
Well, you know, I have to interrupt you here, Bob, too, and say that I think a lot of pilots tend to look forward to their upcoming renewal deadline on their medical certificate and start thinking about these things. But really, you know, that's kind of backwards. I think that what we really have to understand is that this is not just an issue affecting whether or not we get our certificate renewed. These are all issues that affect our quality of life and longevity, even if we weren't pilots.
Clearly. And I think many of us pilots tend to be healthier, I would like to think so, than our contemporaries who are not pilots, because we fear losing our medical more than we fear an impending coronary, I think. You know, I'm prepared to, some person may say, well, I'm prepared to take a couple of days in the hospital and get, you know, a stent inserted or something like that. But if it involves a loss of our medical, those are fighting words. And I know myself that's being nearly full time in this industry, that's something that could put a halt to a lot of my certainly my income. So that this is something that we do have to pay attention to, and insurance companies are making it even more pressing on us, because one of the points that my carrier said is, we get older, it's not unreasonable for our insurance carriers to expect an annual physical rather than a biennial medical that the FAA requires, just to ensure that things haven't changed, particularly as we go beyond age 70 and begin to go into that eighth decade, if you will. But back to what we can do, and this is something that I struggle with, and many of all of us struggle with, is keep the weight under control and watch what you eat. Common sense kind of things, but it's something that if we want to get through that next medical, we're going to have to do it.
All right. The other factor, big factor you mentioned was pilot proficiency, that they're going to be looking at that. Now, first of all, why does that change when you get past age 70, and what should we be doing about it?
Well, you mentioned one word. Dementia is a concern that insurance carriers have. Our reflexes, our responses, they're looking at the accident data. They're correlating the accident data with age of the pilots. Now, they're clearly the insurance companies are not demanding their own pilot proficiency check, but what they are demanding is some evidence of recurrent training when we fill out our insurance renewal form. And that recurrent training now is going beyond when was your last biennial flight review. They want to know, for example, what specifically did you engage yourself in the last 12 months to improve your proficiency. Now, again, for our listeners, we will not likely see this if we're under age 60 or even 70 on our insurance renewals, but in some cases we will. But as we get older, there's going to be demand for solid evidence of recurrent training, that you're staying proficient, that you're doing something. And absent that, it may not be sufficient for them to deny you coverage, but it could affect your rates materially.
Well, and I think there are some other things you can do other than the flight review type environment. You mentioned specifically going online. AOPA has some great courses to improve your capabilities in specific areas of flying.
And document that. You know, I have been a very vocal critic of the FAA's brand new Wings program. But here is one way that if we can get through that rather steep learning curve in developing or understanding the Wings Pilot Proficiency Program, it's an excellent way to document. And this is what it's all about. You know, if it isn't written down, it didn't happen. That's what our AMPs tell us. So the Wings Program is a great way to do it. Listening to podcasts both here and elsewhere, reading the publications, as you said, AOPA's online courseware, wonderful things that we can do to stay proficient.
Well, and if you take one of those online courses, you have the option at the end of it to print the certificate that you know, that confirms that you went through it, and that would be a good thing to do.
Print the certificate, attach it to your insurance application. Absolutely. Document all of this stuff, and it shows. And it shows also later on in the event that there could be a possible violation that we're involved in. The FISDO, when they're considering whether or not to take any kind of enforcement action, they will always ask the question, what kind of pilot is this? Is he or she involved in recurrent training? Are they in the program? Are they participating? Or are they just out there flying when the whim, you know, strikes them?
Okay. Well, Bob, in the second half here, I want to talk about the safety meetings that you wrote about in Over the Airwaves that are taking place in the Buffalo Niagara Falls area, because I think they follow a unique format that I haven't seen elsewhere. We'll talk about that in a moment. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We get together with Bob on Mondays to talk about safety-related issues. Bob, in your latest issue of Over the Airwaves, you wrote about some safety meetings that are taking place in Buffalo involving pilots and air traffic controllers, and they seem to follow a format which is much more informal than other meetings I've had described to me. Tell me how these things got started in the Buffalo area and how they work.
Well, we meet quarterly, and it's a very informal quarterly kind of a meeting between a group of volunteer air traffic controllers from the Buffalo TRACON, Niagara Falls Tower, and a group of any pilots that want to participate. And these are very informal meetings designed to be just that way. There is no agenda, no speaker, no FAA Wings program credit. We simply meet at a fashionable restaurant in downtown Buffalo. We meet at the Buffalo Chop House. And it's a high-end restaurant with the best food in town. And basically what we do via email, I send around a meeting notice, and we have a lead controller at the Buffalo TRACON. He gets the word out to his colleagues. I get the word out to our local pilots, and we meet at typically we meet at 6 o'clock for some cocktails, 7 o'clock for dinner. And how many do we get? We probably get 20, 25 individuals, and the group is small enough so that around the table, there's a lot of hangar flying. But when you do that type of hangar flying with air traffic controllers involved, with pilots, we get to see a whole new perspective of the challenges that both sides experience. And it's useful for the controllers, they say, and it's certainly useful for us.
Well, that was going to be my next question. I can understand how this would be very helpful to pilots and a lot of fun. But what's in it for the air traffic controllers? What do they get out of these meetings?
Well, they get to understand that we pilots are human, number one. They understand, too, that for the most part, we want to participate, that we have radio problems. We have distractions in the cockpit that prevent us from hearing every possible radio call. And I think it's just good State Department type relations. You know, it's not a cold war between the controller and the pilot, as we're oftentimes thinking that they're the enemy or we're the enemy. Many of the controllers are pilots, and also what it does is it might improve communications a little bit. We recognize the voice on the other side of the microphone, and while we're admonished to not get too folksy on the radio with other pilots or air traffic controllers, we have a sense of who these people really are, and that they are nice people, we are nice people, and it just facilitates communications. Now, just we have a TRACON not too far from us that this kind of camaraderie between controllers and pilots clearly does not exist. We hear it on the radio. We can sense the tension that a frustrated controller feels with a pilot who's not up to his or her game, and that doesn't make for good safety.
I guess that would lead to the question, Bob, if someone wants to emulate this format, how did this thing get started in your area, and how do you think someone could put it together? Or is this just kind of nobody's as friendly as people in Buffalo, so it can't happen anywhere else?
No, I think, I think it takes an active pilot in the community, perhaps a local chapter of EAA, they could facilitate it. It certainly takes a controller who is very eager to do something like this and will forward the word to his or her colleagues to come out and try it. And when done socially, and that's what this is all a social endeavor with a very, very solid business component to it, or I should say educational component to it. It's just that once people get to know each other and work side by side, communications improve. And after all, that's what this is all about, communications between pilots and controllers.
Well, now, if I want to start this in my local area, what's the best step? Do I call the local facilities rep from NATCA and say, hey, we'd like to have as many of you guys as would like to come to dinner? Did it start from the controller side? Was it a pilot who started it in the Buffalo area?
I think what it was a pilot who happened to be a friend of a controller, and that started it. Now, we started just with pilots a couple of years ago. It was just a group of my friends that met, and then we extended it to friends of friends. And then the controller, in this particular case, was notified of it, and he said, hey, can I bring some of my controller buddies? And that's what brought the controller component into it. But I think you can start it by just scheduling a visit, a plug-in visit with your local TRACON or tower facility. Get to know somebody over there, talk with them, and say, hey, how about we get together for dinner sometime with a group of pilots? Would you be willing to do that? This is not management endorsed. This is all done on their own time, after hours. And it's, as I said, it's been a very effective. We don't do it all that. We do it every 3 months, four times a year, and it seems to be each time we do it, it gets a little bit better, a little bit bigger, and I guess our greatest fear is that it will get too big, that we'll lose that kind of close contact that we have. But pilots and controllers are like two crew members in the same aircraft, And the better we get to know one another, I think the safer our skies will be.
Well, I would love to hear from anybody else who is listening to this who has anything similar that happens in their area. And, Bob, I've been criticized for not mentioning contact info. You can reach me, and I'll pass on things to Bob if you want, at Paul P., that's P-A-U-L-P, at aero-news.net. Bob, thanks as always for joining us, and have a great week.
Thanks, Paul. Hope to see you soon.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.